Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we come your way every Saturday, normally from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive the programs on the radio show's page at richarddugan.com. And we are rebroadcast Sundays at 2 p.m. Pacific time at a2zen.fm, a2zen.fm. And we are thankful that you are with us to share in the ideas, the concepts, the paradigms, if you will, that folks have, that we open up the microphones and the forum, if you will, for them to share here on this broadcast. Now, this program, of course, as you're listening to it, is later in the evening than you normally would hear it on the stream at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, but is still the same information, still the same length of program, and it happens that the program gets moved around just a little bit, especially in the springtime, in April and May, but normally 3 p.m. Pacific time, but you know, you can avoid all that. Just go to the archives page and download it, or again, time stays pretty constant at a2zen.fm. We're getting some interesting weather here on the Central Coast for April and springtime. It's very nice that we're getting rain. Matter of fact, we're even seeing snow in the backcountry on the hills above our home here in the northern, just on the mountain above Santa Barbara. And it's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. But changes, they're coming, and we know that. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of those changes that may have happened to you. Maybe physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and you're looking for an adjustment, a transition, a healing, a cleansing, whatever the term you wish to use. Well, today we're going to have an opportunity to speak with a woman who, back in 1977, recovered from a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, and we're going to talk with her about her coming out, if you will. And when I say that, I mean that in the context of finally speaking out. She has a book called A Healer's Voice. Now, it's not a new book. It's been out about 10 years, but the work that she's doing is ongoing. She has some wonderful new things that she's bringing to the forefront, and her name is Gentra Green Gardner. And Gentra, welcome to our program.
Well, thanks for having me, and spring is in the air, and I feel like all of us are in the mood to grow and change, and so it's a great time for me to be on with you.
Well, it's an interesting time, too, because here as you and I speak here in April 2012, you know, we're about, 8-9 months away from what a lot of people are earmarking or bookmarking, if you want to use a current technological term, as a pivot point, a transition point that we don't really have much of a choice. We're heading there. I mean, you can't stop the clock, the calendar, et cetera. We're going whether we like it or not. So our choice is, do we go kicking and screaming, or do we face front and just allow ourselves to be moved forward in that process? But a lot of us are, I guess the term, Gentra, is we're suffering from physical conditions and ailments and issues that we've had for who knows how long, mental, emotional, and I really haven't gotten into this much with a lot of our guests, especially when it comes to the issue of healing. But what about spiritual issues? Is there such a thing as a spiritual dis-ease?
Yes, but it's not. No disease is just a spiritual disease. It's physical, it's mental, it's emotional.
Okay.
It's everything. The thing that I want to know, everybody to know, is healing is a gift for everybody. And the kind of healing that I'm talking about is the kind of healing that works through the field of gravity. It's a gift for us like the sun and the moon and the stars. So if you are listening and you want to experience what it feels like to stir your energy field and just get yourself even more relaxed, put either of your hands on your navel and put your other hand on your heart. And just sit like that, and you can do it and breathe and pay attention and relax, or you can do it while you're watching the tube or whatever, and you will notice that your body is coming to a sense of balance that wasn't there before.
Hmm.
So that's what one thing I suggest people do every day for 15 or 20 minutes, just to keep themselves square.
I like that, to keep themselves square. You were diagnosed some 30-odd years ago with multiple sclerosis. Now, I'm sort of going to play the devil's advocate, because it says that you recovered from an MS diagnosis.
Right. Now, I don't know if I really had it, though, Richard, because back then they didn't do brain scans.
Okay.
So they didn't see the shriveled up. They didn't see the shriveled up things they do in MS diagnosis now.
Right, right.
And they didn't do a spinal tap. My neurologist said if the spinal tap could say I had it, and if it did, then it would ruin my insurance the rest of my life. And if it said I didn't have it, then I still probably have it.
Interesting.
And so I never, that's why I say I recovered from the diagnosis. I was numb from the neck down on the left side of my body. I lost bladder control. I had a lot of my ligaments got very loose, so I could sprain an ankle or a wrist or anything. I had a lot of generalized symptoms. I walked with a crazy walk people with MS often get into, you know, early on.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, in fact, my old neurologist told me I was going to die soon. Within a couple years, I could. I was 28 at that time. And I just decided to look at my body as an experiment and say, well, can I move the symptoms from a physical level to a mental, emotional, or spiritual level? And I did everything in terms of therapy, you know, healing, chiropractic, anything I could find. And then if I liked it, I learned it. And so that's why I became, you know, a healer. By 1990, I'd spent over $100,000 on myself.
Wow.
I didn't have children. You know, I didn't own a home. I, didn't own a car. I was riding the bus. I was just investing in changing my body. Now, I stopped having symptoms in 1980, but then after you stop having new symptoms, then there's all the rehab on all the damage there was, you know, so that I could walk right and everything else. And I think in 1990, when I won 7 straight ballroom dance competitions, you know, was a novice. I'm not like Dancing with the Stars kind of level. I then figured out I was healed of whatever that was. You know, I'd say a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, because I don't know.
Well, and that's rather interesting, because when I've talked with people on this program about the various conditions that we have today, under the very large banner of cancer.
Right.
My present wife, was diagnosed 11 years ago with what was referred to as a rare form of cancer. And so it was a situation that really allowed her to go through the process of basically standing up for herself and voicing and so forth. And so I'm wondering about those kinds of conditions. Can you elucidate a little bit on what you have found over the last 30 years as far as these kinds of, I want to say, new conditions that we've actually had for centuries, but we've just given them new names?
Well, you understand nobody comes to a healer as the first place they go. So everybody that I work on who has cancers or Lou Gehrig's disease or whatever you want to call it, they've tried everything else and it's failed most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, unless they know me through the word of mouth. So they're always at fourth stage where everything is metastasized all over.
Mm.
And just in general, about half the people that come to see me completely recover from that stage.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that the body, when you wake up the rhythms of the body, the deep within the seat of chi, which is like in the pelvic bowl, is our will to survive. And I've learned to never discount that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen some people really change, but mostly what it takes is a person being willing to receive love in the terms of letting people get involved and touch them. So lots of times people come to me with, a terrible cancer. They might have, I might ask them to assemble as many friends as they can. Like, I've worked on people who've had 20 people come to their house, and I spend 3 hours teaching them not a class in healing, but here's where you put your hands and here's for how long, and this is going to help him. Then we set up a calendar, and all these volunteers come and work on their friend for three times a week or twice a week as a standard of care for someone like that. And if they die, then they've had all this wonderful connection time, mm-hmm. you know, to really be close to them. And, of course, if they don't die, then they've got the hooray, whoopee, look what we did to help him.
Right.
You know, so it's a win-win
right.
to do it. It's really a great thing to do it. And, of course, sometimes I have people flying in, you know, from the East Coast or from Denver, or they'll hear that we have this, and then they pay me because I'm a professional. You know, I charge for my services.
Sure.
But well, I do have some volunteers. I work on people for free too, but I mean they pay me, and then I ask all my volunteers to help, so they'll have between six people and eight people working on them for 4 or 5 hours a day for 3 or 5 days, and that has really been effective too.
Yeah. Now, what I find interesting, because of the way you've phrased that, both my wife and I are both Reiki masters, and after learning the practices and so forth, we of course learned about the absentee aspects of it too. So, my father's brother was dying of cancer. Mm-hmm. And we asked if we could get a photograph of him because we wanted to send him an absentee healing, which we did. And it was several days after that that this story was relayed to us, that he became angry at one point and threw his medication across the room, said enough is enough, had enough energy to get into his wheelchair, wheel across the compound, as it were, where he lived. His son lived in an adjoining house. He went there. I guess they had their moments. They had some closure and so forth. And then he passed.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And neither my wife nor I felt that there was really any problem with that, because the whole point was sending the energy so that the individual could do with it what they chose. If they wanted to stay, they could use it towards their healing. If they were tired and they said, I've had enough, I want to go, they could go.
Yeah, I agree with that idea. I do. If anybody wants to receive remote healing from me and my group, all they have to do is email me, and there's no charge for that.
And you have a website, which is healing, if I'm reading correctly, I'm actually reading it off of the Journey to the Heart of the Earth CD, which is a meditation CD. And the website here is healinghandsnetwork.org.
Right. That's the right one.
All right.
They can email me there.
Right. There's contact information. Again, that's healinghandsnetwork.org. And do you want to give out this phone number?
Sure.
All right. It is 651-222-4940. 651-222-4940 if you want to get in touch with Gentra. We're talking about healing, and we have talked a lot on this program, Gentra, about the whole aspect of healing. And I will relay a very brief version of this story to you because I want to get your impressions, not so much of the story, but maybe of the idea. Working for a station for many years, being born legally blind, people came up and said, we want to lay hands on you and we want to restore your sight. The response came back, no, I appreciate your efforts, but that's not my purpose here. Was the reply. My purpose is to do what it is that I'm doing. And I would listen to many prayer programs over the long period that I worked for the station, and I would hear the same people calling in day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And it took me a long time to realize that it wasn't that they weren't getting their healing, it's that that's not what they were wanting. What they were wanting was the connection. It's like what you said. If the person dies, they had that wonderful connection.
And I think it's all about connection. I think this is a new energies. The 2012 energies mm-hmm. are about connection, collaboration, being seen, each person being validated.
Is that also?
I think that's so healing. And I think empathy is the biggest healer there is. If you know, you can feel that I understand you. Down to your toes, you've received a healing that is remarkable.
Do you feel that you say this is a new energy, is it, and that's one of the, it's one of the things I find interesting is how we label things as new because we've kind of discovered them maybe in this generation, but
right.
they're as old as the earth in many
okay.
instances.
Right, I'll grant you that.
Okay, and again, it's more an observation on my part. To open up people's eyes to saying, look, this isn't some newfangled woo-woo thing that we're doing here. This has been around as long as the Earth and the universe have been around. We're just tapping into it. You know, it's kind of like 5,000-year-old Chinese medicine. There hasn't been no FDA. They just knew that they knew that it worked.
Right.
When you go into the process of healing with someone, it's very individualized. There's no cookie cutter. Each person gets something exclusively for them, right?
Right. That is a frequency of awakening that I'm calling snowflake,
mm-hmm.
and it is as individual as a person is. And since I've been aligned with that idea or concept or energy, as you will. I feel like every healing is an adventure for me.
Mm.
You know, it's new. It's not like a cookie cutter, as you said. And we've just had some remarkable successes. And so I'm guardedly optimistic. I mean, with our people's physical changes. And we came up really with four energy constructs that I don't think are just related to healing. That are, I think these are universal ideas and probably old in some book, as you would say. But they are sticky, slippery, magnetic, and dissolve. And so using intention, if somebody has like a hiatal hernia, you know, and they always have a gastric, reflux,
mm-hmm.
I can put in my mind, not just put my hand where that problem is on their body, but I can put a sticky there and stick that together.
Hmm.
And I've had that work remotely, and I've had it work when I've worked on people. And then I had a woman who had a little bump on the top of her head that was really paining her, and it took less than 5 minutes. I put a slippery on that, and all the pain was gone, and it just dropped half the size. So I don't know. I don't have enough track record to know that this is going to be wow. It's just been a few months that we've been having some random changes like that. But it's enough to keep us very interested and excited. I have like a group. I've trained probably 600 people in Minnesota in the metro area and a couple hundred outstate in Minnesota. And there's a think tank group of people of about 200 people. And they form a volunteer network, so anybody can connect with them, connect with me, and I have a retired lady who runs a volunteer network. They can get free healings. But this is a group that, like, we our healing's based on the uncertainty principle.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we think we understand how something works, we find out something that completely changes that and broadens us. So.
Yeah.
We're very fluid, and we're based on the open source method. So I learned Reiki in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And so certainly some of the Reiki principles and, you know, the Reiki person I learned when was the first healer, Ethel Lombardi, who taught me that people's bodies can change in the twinkling of an eye. You know, and as soon as you learn that, I mean, I'll never forget her.
Yeah.
But that lets me expect that. So, of course, healers always want a faster way. So everything I learned, then I incorporate, say, can we do that faster? Can we be more elegant? And in the 1980s, when I went to Hawaii, I learned about Ho'oponopono, which means God is rhythm. That's one of the translations. And I thought, what if we could just vibrate out everything, you know, by being in line with God? What if we didn't have to tell our stories or, you know, move our feelings, or what if guilt is just dead wood that clogs our body's energy field? And that's why therapy and confession and meditation doesn't keep us away from guilt very fast or very long. So we're kind of an interesting group of people here in Minnesota. We take things apart and talk about them and learn as we're doing it.
Now, I've heard the term guilt is a wasted energy or emotion.
Yeah,
you know,
I think of it as dead wood.
Dead wood. Yeah, I like that. And I've often thought about that myself. I went through a number of personal growth and development programs in the late 70s, early 80s, even into the 90s with my first wife. And I remember one of my first early thoughts when I started going with my first wife, and I'd look around the room and I'd go, when are these people going to get it? You know, because I'd been studying a lot of this, early on since I was 17. But then I realized that there was one other person in the room that I hadn't addressed, and that was me. And and it took me about 10 or 15 years to realize, no, it's not them. It's when am I going to get it? Mm-hmm. And I find that that seems to really be a turning point for most people in terms of not just their healing, but raising their consciousness, becoming more aware of who they are, what their purpose is, and what their connection is to the rest of humanity, let alone the rest of the universe. Mm-hmm. Do you have processes that you have learned that you use that can help one? Maybe they don't have a lot of this excess baggage. And that's not to say that someone, you know, necessarily, we come into this world without any baggage and then we start collecting it, which would be a wonderful thing if we could bring children into this world that didn't collect the baggage, but we do. Mm-hmm. Do you have any processes for those who are just, I really just want to raise my awareness, my understanding, my consciousness to live a better life, or do they really have to, kind of like what you were saying before, you know, you talk about guilt being dead wood, all this other stuff, is that kind of dead wood in that context, and that we don't really need to go through all that, that there is a way for us to just rise above?
I think there is, and that's what the new snowflake is. If you just, you know how in kindergarten, everybody cut out a snowflake out of paper?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
Okay. Well, part of the attunement for snowflake, and, you know, any of our listeners can do this, is you actually cut out your snowflake, you sit on it, and then you bring it up into your pelvic bowl, and then you change it so that it becomes a 3D snowflake, and then you connect it to all your organs and genitals in a different way. I usually lead people through that. Mm-hmm. Then in the middle of the snowflake, that is your still point. And the still point is not new. The Qigong masters were after the still point. That's why they did Qigong. The Buddhist people who meditated, you know, avoided their mind to get to that perfect state of stillness. That's what they were looking for. Now, I do think as humans, we've spiritually evolved. We started at the harmonic convergence with our consciousness, and now this gift, this is another gift from the part of our body that knows that the drive to exist is the most important, which would be the root, you know, our place of where we exist. Mm-hmm. This is offered to us. And so when I really focus people's attention on that the middle of that snowflake, they can get to that still point just through the desire to do it.
Mm.
And they have this calming, centering feeling. And after they do participate in this, I do it in a day-long class. After they participate in that class, it takes about 3 days before they can do it easily. You know, it's like there's a restructuring of the body that just happens, you know, in our emotions. And we're used to being cut off from our part of ourselves. But this is the time where the sacral chakra, this is the first healing energy that's come from the sacral chakra, the place of our emotional archive and our sexuality and our money and all the things that the ego, that old spiritual practices said, oh, set that aside. This embraces who you are, your particular ego, and it says, I belong here, I'm going to be here on the planet, and I'm going to have a way to find my calm and, you know, be always in the eye of the storm. And that's what that still point is, and that's the middle of the snowflake that is in your pelvis, whether you know it or not.
Mm.
It's about awareness, and that's why I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
In case somebody's listening and they say, well, that sounds fruity, but maybe I'll try it.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to tell the mind, okay, you can think what you want. I'm going to go ahead and move forward with this anyway.
Yeah. You know? I mean, experience, you know.
Yeah.
It's like Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. So I'm imagining this.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe it. You can just imagine it.
Yeah. And that's what's rather interesting about all of this, because it isn't about belief. I'm trying to remember something in regards to that whole concept of the difference between belief and just knowing, but it's not an intellectual knowing. It's a deeper, a more spiritual, universal. We know that it works. Don't know how. As a matter of fact, one of my guests on the program was challenged by a caller and asked, well, how do you know it works? You know, in the context of even how does it work? And he says, you know, I've never been asked that question before. I just know that it does. And it's helped lots of people. And this was in his particular area of expertise. And I'm guessing that's the same thing with you. You don't know intellectually how all of this works. You just know intuitively that it works, right?
Yeah, I can make up a theory, though. Give me 2 seconds, you know? And then if you ask me next week, I'll have a different theory. That's the uncertainty principle.
Yeah.
You know? And it keeps me creative and, you know, keeps all of us talking about healing. And I think it does help us create faster ways. But, yeah, there's no way to know.
No, there isn't.
I mean, right now, the snowflake is what is driving me.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what drives me after that.
We'll talk more about the snowflake. We'll talk more about your background, Gentra, as we continue here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. And it's usually at this time that we talk with Beth McDonald, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, but she is on assignment today. And we'll be back next week to talk with us about the next in a series of zodiac signs. We're kind of focusing on those as we move through them to give you an idea of what they're about, how they affect you, how you affect them, and so forth. We'll get more into that next week with the next sign, which I haven't a clue what it is, but we'll find out next week. You probably know what it is, and that's fine. But right now, I just want to let you know that Tell Me Your Story comes your way every Saturday, normally from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we also are archiving the programs at richarddugan.com, and it's on the radio shows page. It's the second link down below the schedule. On the far right of the page, your half, if you will, is the link to listen live every Saturday. And then we're rebroadcast Sundays at 2 p.m. Pacific time at A2Zen.fm. That's A2Zen.fm, 2 p.m. Sundays, and that's Pacific time. And I'd like to hear from you. I know my guests would like to hear from you. We link to every one of our guests' website that have a website. And I think I've only had one or two guests in the last 4.5 or 5 years, whatever the case may be, who did not. And so I've actually created a page on my site that will take you to them. There's an address or phone number, some way of contacting them. But most of my guests have websites. Gentra is no exception, and she has a website. I'll let you know that is healinghandsnetwork.org. That's healinghandsnetwork.org. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back. Gentra Green Gardner is my guest, and we're talking about A Healer's Voice, the title of a book that she has available. She has a meditation, actually she says several meditation CDs, Journey to the Heart of the Earth. It is a meditation for healing our broken hearts, available through the website healinghandsnetwork.org. And you can also get in touch with her through that website. She has an email address. Gentra, it's great to have you on the program. The book that you have, as you say, is about 10 years old or so, and yet just as valid as it was, I'm sure, the day that it was. Actually, I'm seeing the copyright. It's 12 years old, but needly, let's not split hairs here.
All right.
Your book came out of your experiences, specifically in 1977. I'd actually like to go back further than that. Was this something that was even of interest to you before you were ever diagnosed, before you ever had the numbing sensations on the one side of the body, et cetera, et cetera? Or was this something that that was the catalyst?
That was the catalyst. I was not interested in healing. I was not awake. I was not even very self-aware.
Okay. So where were you before this particular period in time, especially and more specifically, where were you on a spiritual level?
Well, I was a theology major in college, and I worked at a Lutheran church as a director of Christian education and youth ministry. Mm-hmm. Yes, I worked in the church with 7 years. And I really thought everything was sweetness and light. And I'm not saying it isn't, that God doesn't love you. And I had a very rocky, terrible childhood that I completely denied. Mm. And so, was a really a wake-up call and a way for me to. I had to pay attention, and I had buried so many rotten memories. It took a while to dig them up.
Oh, I can imagine. It's interesting to me that we go through our day-to-day lives, and we have, in one sense, been conditioned, some would say programmed, to just go about our day-to-day lives. Then a particular event happens, and the last thing that we'll call it the system wants is for you to get distracted from going about your day-to-day life and doing the things that the system wants you to do, and suddenly you wake up. Did you find a lot of resistance? And the system, you can put any institutional label you want on that. Did you find that the people around you who were going about their day-to-day lives as you delved into this, not just in terms of your own healing, in terms of the diagnosis, but then what came after that, was there some resistance?
For sure. The man I married divorced me. He did not want to have a woman who had multiple sclerosis. He had plans for a large family.
Oh, my gosh.
He just let me know. So that was my first, I think I was diagnosed in March, and he divorced me by September.
Now,
went on a bicycle trip to find himself and came back and said, it's over.
Now, let me ask you on that note, because I've heard this from other people and I've heard this on other programs. Do you acknowledge his willingness to say that rather than stick it out, even though he didn't want to be there? I mean, would you have preferred that?
No, I'd rather he left. That's fine. I mean, at the time, I made myself the most important thing. That was, transactional analysis therapists would call that a script release.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I got the diagnosis, rather than pleasing everybody else, I knew that if I was going to survive, I'd have to make me number one.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I can't fault somebody else for making themselves number one.
Right.
And if we're meant to be together, we're meant to be together. And I did worry, with all the years I spent in therapy, if I'd find someone else, and I did find someone else who's just happy with who I am. So I do think that if you're true to yourself, that's the important thing.
Yeah. So what happened after that continued this path where you are today?
After my divorce,
after your divorce, uh-huh.
I found a job where I could learn about therapy, and then I did do that job, and it was a job where people were redoing their childhood and going back to their childhood. And so I worked at a halfway house for mentally ill and hearing impaired adults. And the thing about those people is they grow up with parents who don't share a common language with. So I really worked to learn about how to increase their sense of having a structure through their parent, what was back then called the parent ego state. How can they have incorporate values if they don't have words for them? So I started there, and then I started a day treatment program that included two mentally ill, hearing impaired adults and a bunch of other people. And that's when I really started working in earnest with how fast can we let go of our childhood memories.
Hmm.
And that was in the 80s. And that program closed in the late 80s. And then in the 90s is the first time that I started doing hands-on healing in my home. Mm-hmm. And so, and in the 80s is when I went to Hawaii and found out, you know, remembered God as rhythm. And then there's a group of us in 1992 who we'd all kind of had different stories. I had MS, the other people had other things. And so we were like a think tank group, and we said, okay, what if guilt is dead wood? What's our hypothesis? If, you know, and so we came up with three heart healing, three heart balancing. And that was an energy field that was on, tacked on top of the old chakra system. So the first heart is the third eye, the second heart is the physical heart, and the third heart is the seat of chi. So when it looked like evolutionary-wise, most things in the world, like Reiki and all that, come through the crown chakra and the third eye energy center. And then I think about when Buddha and Christ hit the planet, then the middle heart opened up, you know, love one another as we love each, you know.
Yeah.
That. And then in the 90s, the bottom heart opened up. So it wasn't just that we brought in the will heart and the awakening of the pelvic bowl, but then people started thinking, well, let's embrace the dark brightness. Let's look at the dark side and how it's not, maybe not so dark. So I think the harmonic convergence was a time that the will heart came into its own, and our little group took that aspect and developed the into the healing. And it for me, it was never really a healing modality. It was an evolutionary modality. Can we change this and this and this? Can we evolve ourselves spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and then physically? So sometimes people healed and sometimes they didn't.
Mm-hmm. But they rose a little higher, if you will. They understood a little bit more. They became a little bit more aware in that context.
They woke up.
Yeah, they began waking up. How did this whole experience over that period of time affect your belief system? I mean, you were raised in the church,
right? I completely changed. I think, you know, first I went through a phase where, of course, I thought God has many faces. You know, I let go of the whole idea that you had to be Christian in order to get to heaven. Mm-hmm. Then I went through the whole God has many faces, and then I went through the whole. Even right now, I don't think that things that are evil, somebody might judge as evil, are evil.
Yeah.
You know? So I think of, you know, if you hear something horrible on the news, and yes, I'm not saying on one level it isn't horrible, but maybe it's what these people need or want, or it's an expression, or maybe they're holding the space for something crummy so that I can move ahead into something more light. So I've changed a lot into how I look at the world, and I that's one thing I think I can count on is change of course.
Yeah.
So
the constant in the universe.
It's good. It's
yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. You know, when you say that, it brings back to memory a Thanksgiving in my parents' home. I think I was 21 or 22. I'd moved out, and one of my sisters was a member of a very, very rigid Christian system, and we were chatting in the kitchen rather vociferously, and she certainly was not real happy with the direction that my life was going in terms of my own personal beliefs. And I had to tell her, I said, you know, my beliefs of yesterday are not my beliefs of today, are not my beliefs of tomorrow. I don't know what I'm going to believe tomorrow because I'm constantly experiencing new things, and I'm not willing to ignore or delete my experiences because some book tells me so, that tells me to do so, tells me that that's not the way to go.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I kind of ask that question of you, because that had to, maybe it wasn't that hard for you. Maybe you were already ready to make that shift and continue the process of change and evolution.
I think it was hard, but I also think it wasn't. I think that right now what I'm thinking is really pertinent for my belief system is that the dark side, evil, the horrible things we human beings have done to each other,
yeah,
we have been so creative throughout history that energy's completely expressed itself in every possible manifested form. However, the way we love each other, the way we connect with each other, creativity, I think has barely been able to express. And I think that's our growing edge. And so the thing about the snowflake that I think is pertinent to that is it changes the body's vibration from thinking that I exist because I'm in pain to I exist because I'm in pleasure. So change one person at a time, change the whole world with that each time a person takes a step, because it changes the whole collective, and bring us more toward that loving, creative, I've got miles to go in experiencing how powerful I can be and how loving I can be and how full of joy I can be. And I think all of humans, that's going to be our growing edge. The other stuff is just old stuff that we've done over and over and over again.
Mm. Yeah. The definition of insanity, as you've certainly heard many times, is, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Right.
When in the reality, you get the same result. I used to be able to use the analogy of a videotape and putting it into the VCR and watching it and expecting a different ending. Now it's on DVD, yeah, or you download it, but they now have alternative endings. So unless you know what, yeah, a videotape is, the analogy isn't going to mean a whole lot. I'm also curious, too. We've been asking the question, what is man's purpose here? What are we trying to achieve? Because doesn't seem like we're really achieving much of anything these days. It's just like we're on a treadmill or on a wheel, a little rodent wheel, and we're just spinning, and that's all we're doing. So share with us from your perspective, what is humanity's purpose, and what can we achieve?
Well, as you got a glimpse, as I think we've got a lot to learn about the positive aspects of love and creativity and all that expression. And this is my imagination, this is my fantasy about our purpose, is that each individual who's as individual as a snowflake has their personal purpose and personal expression. And I don't get to judge whether that's positive or negative. You know, it just is. That's on a individual level. As a group, I think we decided to embrace suffering. We decided to embrace learning through suffering and pain. And we decided that the reason we wanted to do that is we wanted to learn about evolution. And we have learned about evolution. You know, humans have learned about biological evolution, and now we're learning about, you know, even emotional evolution through the ages. And so why we wanted to learn about evolution is we wanted to evolve the amount of love we were feeling. So now it's time to recollect ourselves and remember why we started this big experiment called being human and bring that into the third dimension, bring that into our physical body, bring that into our earth and heal our earth. So that's my fantasy about the big purposes, and that's why the communication and collaboration is a big important piece of that, because there's no messiahs anymore. There's nobody who's going to have all the answers. As a group, we're going to have answers.
Mm. That's interesting. I do find that we have been through so much over the course of this generation in particular. There are those who, when they look at the times in which we live, especially on a universal and spiritual level, refer to those of us who are here, all 7 billion plus, as heroes, because they're saying that we have chosen to be here during this transition period.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. I hadn't heard that heroes thing, but I do think we're all immensely important.
Yeah.
And I, you know, Clyde and I have a niece who's 4 years old who I was playing with on Easter, and she was singing and dancing, and I was kind of singing and dancing with her, and then she said to me, "You pay attention to what I'm going to say next." So she starts singing a song about a butterfly heart, and I thought, I will pay attention. That's a message.
Wow.
Then I took it to my Monday night class, and so, you know, I won't give you the long details because groups are so creative,
sure,
in what they do. But we had the human heart, and we all of a sudden made it a cocoon, and the butterfly came out of the heart. And then we'd been working on a guy who had colon cancer, and in our way of looking at things, and I think it's an Oriental medicine way of looking at things, the colon is the seat of despair.
Right.
And we were told years ago that there's a continuum there, that there's the colon is the seat of despair and the seat of joy or ecstasy. Mm. And, you know, we talked about it, and we said, you know, I don't think I've ever experienced joy and ecstasy from my colon. I can't say I ever have.
Yeah.
This would be a new energy.
Yes.
So
yeah.
We put the, all of a sudden we put the butterfly in the colon, and we saw it turn inside out.
Wow.
And we said, what if we just drop that as a rock
right.
in a pond, and that's going to ripple throughout the earth.
Incredible. Hold that
Which
story.
Which is why I'm telling you this story on the radio, because I want to ripple it.
Right. This is Tell Me
and
Your
so
Story.
So this is the kind of crazy creativity that I love to do in my practice. And this is why I have people who are volunteers and who like to be with me, as it gives us a sense of purpose to think that we can, through our imagination, change reality. It's fun.
Well, now, that's a real struggle for a lot of people, is this whole concept that I learned about years and years ago about creating your own reality, and that there has been sort of, it's on the one hand, it's a paradox to some people. That, wait a minute, if you can create your own reality, isn't that going to impact my reality? And what if I don't want your reality?
Yeah, what if you don't? I think it goes back to what the scientists say. You know, I think the astrophysicists and the physicists who say that the Earth itself is 4%, the mass that we see and we experience. The 96% of the Earth is dark matter and dark energy. Dark doesn't mean evil here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying like crazy to measure that. That's why they're building the particle smashers in France and, you know, the thing in Lucerne in Switzerland. They're trying to find out how to measure dark matter and dark energy. They're so convinced it's real. And it's the same for our physical bodies. My physical body's 4% of me. So 96% of me is dark matter and dark energy, which they can see through the Hubble telescope, by the way. So my dark matter and dark energy can interface and immerse with yours or anybody's.
Mm.
And so we are all one. The only place we have really a boundary is our physical body. And I think our physical body is the meeting place for all our astral, etheric, all of our unseen energy bodies. So it's really important to heal it. It's really important to pay attention to it. And it's our vehicle for interfacing with the earth. But when it comes to someone getting to complain about maybe not wanting to change just because I change, they don't get to complain like that. Because if they get to hold on to their crummy reality that says, the only escape I have is when I get drunk every Friday night, their 96% of them, that's influencing me.
Yeah.
So life isn't fair, you know. So if I tend to be intentional and say, I'm going to create things so the colon is a place of joy and ecstasy, mm-hmm. and ripple that through, and if somebody's upset and they have a fit because of that, they'll go, why did I feel so angry when so-and-so said that to me? And 2 days ago, it didn't make me angry. It could have been they were upset about my ripple and they had no idea.
You know, it raises the interesting question, and we'll use your specific example of the colon. Doctors who specialize in the colon, I would think that most doctors at some level wish they could go out of business, that the conditions that affect the area of specialty would just go away, so that maybe they could pursue their true heart's desire. Because I really find it hard to believe that an individual finds a great deal of joy and satisfaction in the blood and the gore and so forth of having to deal with all of this dis-ease.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that, and I'm sure there are some that maybe they say, oh, there is great beauty in knowing that you've done all you can do, but boy, wouldn't it be nice if these conditions went away? And of course, a lot of people would say, well, yeah, if you, what happens if a matter of fact, that was one of the issues with Gandhi and the and making salt, sea salt, was he was going to put the other salt makers from Britain out of business.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, but now these people are self-sufficient and you don't have to do that anymore. You can go do something else.
Something else fun.
Yeah.
Well, you look at the, I look at the colon, though, and it is the enteric brain. There are more nerve endings
the what
in the
brain?
Colon than there are in the brain in my head.
The what brain?
Enteric.
Enteric.
E-N-T-A-R-I-C, I think it's spelled. You can Google it.
Okay.
And it's the first brain we had when we were in utero. So it's very reptilian. You know, it's all about our survival.
Right.
You know, and I remember Menman Oz on Oprah a couple years ago saying that Johns Hopkins University Medical Department is looking at the enteric brain or the colon as the place to heal depression, obesity, diabetes, some of those things. Now, I tried to Google that. There's nothing on the internet about that. The only way I know that that could be true is that he said it. So I think the colon is is just a power pack place to be, you know, and any kind of healing energy that comes from the colon, you know, which I think Snowflake is going to be powered by that will to survive and all that untapped creative energy that must be there.
Well, it's there is no question. It's an extraordinary field, if you will. It's very broad these days in terms of healing because there seem to be so many different modalities out there. And yours is one of those that is again, of course, working to help people to free themselves from, you know, the chains, if you will, of that particular condition so that they can go on. Because do you feel it is not an individual's purpose in life to be healed, per se, to live with a particular condition?
Well, I don't know. You know, I think sometimes people don't pay attention to themselves. You know, we get involved in the 24/7, and we stop listening to our heart and stop paying attention to what is really important to us, and sometimes a disease will stop us, you know, make us reevaluate. And sometimes, you know, there's sometimes people, I don't understand all the purposes people have in life, you know, their individual soul purposes. You know, sometimes if they're suffering, they might be doing themselves and the people around them a favor that I don't understand.
Hmm.
So I try not to judge that.
Yeah.
All I do is I'm going to be there. I'm going to be empathetic. I'm going to love that person in whatever way I can because it's fun for me. Not because I'm going to save them from themselves. And then I'm going to see what happens. And what's interesting is most people I'm around, they get healed.
A healer's...
So maybe I just don't attract the people that don't want to be healed. I don't know.
Well, that may very well be. We could get into the issue of magnetism and so forth. We'll have to save that for another time. A Healer's Voice is the name of the book, and Healing Hands Network is the name of the website. That's healinghandsnetwork.org, where you can get in touch with Gentra Green Gardner. And Gentra, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story and the information and opportunities that where people can free themselves from some of the things that they're struggling with.
Well, thanks for having me, Richard. It was fun to talk with you.
Well,
we have a lot in common, it sounds like.
It sounds like, indeed. And I thank you. And again, I encourage people to get in touch with you. We are linked to her website, healinghandsnetwork.org. You can also dial 651-222-4940, 651-222-4940. Again, the book is entitled A Healer's Voice. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Ugin, your host, and I encourage you to join us every Saturday. And we encourage you to go to our archives page. Go to the links to many of our guests, including Gentra, again, healinghandsnetwork.org, and to find out more about what they have to offer. And we encourage you, it's like a smorgasbord. You take what you need and leave the rest. You don't have to embrace the whole thing. Embrace what resonates with you, what rings true for you. That's the most important thing that will assist and help and serve you. And if it's not serving you anymore, then why hang on to it? I that would be my question to you. Why, as a matter of fact, people are going through their garages and so forth, getting rid of a lot of stuff, as am I, and clearing space for new, greater things. And so we certainly hope that you will do that. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I am Richard Dugan, your host. And again, I encourage you to join us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal.